Galileo. The cathedral in Pisa, Italy, was still and quiet that morning over 400 years ago, and the young medical student had much to think about. He didn't want to disappoint his father's hopes in him, yet he didn't know how to fulfill them, not when he was pulled so strongly in other directions. His father, although a talented musician and teacher, had very little money. His plan was that his first son would enter medicine, a lucrative profession, and support the rest of the family. But that first son, as he sat in the filtered light of the church windows and gazed upon the paintings of Christ and his crucifixion, was having doubts. He didn't like medicine. He felt instead an irresistible pull towards science and mathematics. Perhaps here, in the sanctuary of Catholic faith, which he himself felt so deeply, there would be an answer. 18-year-old Galileo Galilei waited and listened. A light breeze was drifting through the cathedral, and Galileo found himself meditating on a bronze lamp hanging from an arch, swinging back and forth in gentle rhythm with the wafting air. As he watched, he found his mind shifting from his problems to the movements of the lamp. Some of its swings were wide and some were narrow, but it seemed that no matter how wide or narrow, every swing took the same amount of time. How could he be sure this was so? The year was 1582. No watches had yet been invented. There were no electric clocks to guide the young student. But suddenly he had an inspiration. He would use his pulse. His pulse was regular and dependable. Surely it could help him test his theory. So he began to count each swing of the lamp with his own heartbeats. One, two, three, then again. One, two, three, and again. It was true. Every swing took the same number of seconds. It was the first experiment and the first discovery of the great Italian scientist, and it would soon lead to his first invention, a device that doctors could use to measure the pulse, which he called a pulsilogia. A century later, it would lead to another invention, the pendulum clock. There would be many more experiments and discoveries by Galileo in the years to come. Eventually, he would redefine the universe. His work would bring him respect and fame. It would also bring him persecution and imprisonment. Galileo would join the large group of scientists throughout history who had to struggle against ignorance and prejudice in their pursuit of knowledge and truth. The courage and determination he showed in his fight would eventually earn him almost as much admiration as his contributions to science, but that would come later. No one in Galileo's childhood could have predicted the great scientific achievements that lay ahead of him. Greatness they could have predicted, but in which field, that would have been the question. For as a child, Galileo showed a Da Vinci-like array of talents and skills. He was a superb musician like his father. He was a skilled artist. He was a gifted poet. He was so clever at building his own toys that, at first, his parents thought he would be an engineer. Every month, his family changed its mind about what the future might hold for young Galileo. Galileo Galilei was born in the seaport of Pisa on February 15, 1564, the same year William Shakespeare was born. He was born a few days before the death of Michelangelo, and, according to some biographers, on the same day. So, as the sun was setting in Italy on one of the greatest artists of our time, it was rising on one of the greatest scientists. Galileo was the oldest of five children. It was a family position that carried certain burdens. His father had high expectations of his firstborn, and later in life, after his father's death, Galileo would have to take financial responsibility for his sisters. As a result, he was often desperate for money. Desperation for money is what finally decided his father to settle on a career for Galileo, a career in medicine. Galileo went off to college to begin his studies in medicine, and it wasn't very long before he had a new nickname, the Wrangler. He asked questions. He argued. He refused to accept what others insisted he must. Galileo wrangled with everyone, his professors, his fellow students, and the esteemed authors of his textbooks. Most of all, he wrangled with Aristotle. Aristotle, one of the greatest philosophers of the Golden Age of Greece, had been dead almost 2,000 years when Galileo began his studies, But in those 2,000 years, almost nothing had changed in the field of science. Aristotle's views on man, nature, and the cosmos were still the views that guided human thought. They were also the views upheld by the Church, which would prove a very sticky situation for Galileo some years later. When Galileo was in school, there was only one acceptable point of view. Aristotle is right about everything. No one doubts Aristotle. There's no need to experiment with or prove Aristotle's theories, because they speak for themselves. Galileo, on the other hand, wanted everything proved. Proof would become the driving force in his life. Soon, Galileo's father was no longer able to afford his college education. He applied for a grant from the nobility, but was turned down. It was a blessing in disguise, for Galileo was then free to pursue his own developing passion in science and mathematics. As soon as he entered the field his heart had chosen, he met with success. He was only 21 when he invented the hydrostatic balance, a tool that finds the gravity of objects by weighing them in water. This invention won him the attention of the scientific community throughout Europe. A few years later, he wrote a paper about the way solids act when they're put into motion and won even more acclaim. Now he was being referred to as the Archimedes of his time. Archimedes was an ancient Greek physicist who had discovered some of the basic principles of geometry and mechanics. Galileo must have been pleased by his new title, for he had once called Archimedes his master. Around this time, Galileo accepted a teaching post at the University of Pisa as a lecturer in mathematics. It was a respectable position, and his students loved him, but the salary was small, only $100 a year. A small salary was soon to become a big problem. In 1591, when Galileo was 27, his father died, and it became his task to care for his mother, his sisters, and his brothers. His two sisters were a particular challenge. They both wanted to get married, and they both required a sizable dowry. Galileo's younger brother, Michelangelo, promised to help raise the money, but then ran off and got married himself, spending everything he had on his own lavish wedding. Michelangelo, a talented musician, was a charming but irresponsible character who put great burdens on Galileo until the day he died. While Galileo was teaching math, he decided it was time to put one of Aristotle's theories to the test. It was a revolutionary idea, but he thought that in this way he might convince his students, and even the world, that Aristotle had his limitations. For one thing, Aristotle had said that if you dropped a 10-pound weight and a 1-pound weight at the same time, the 10-pound weight would fall 10 times as fast as the 1-pound weight. For 18 centuries, everybody had accepted this theory without ever once testing it. But Galileo loved to test theories. After all, that was how theory became truth. He made an announcement to his students. Two bodies falling through space at the same time reach the ground at the same time, no matter what they weighed, and he was going to prove it. According to legend, a few mornings later, his students in tow and the curious citizens of Pisa following, Galileo set out for the Tower of Pisa. He climbed up the tower, a 10-pound shot in one hand, a 1-pound shot in the other, and at the top he paused. The world below waited. Who would be the victor, the ancient sage of Greece or the 25-year-old rebel from Pisa? There were mutters and opinions from the crowd. He would fail, he's crazy. Who could know more than Aristotle? And from his students, cheers of encouragement. Galileo approached the edge of the roof. The crowd moved back. He stretched his arms out over the edge, a weight in each one. Below, there was now only silence. Then he suddenly let go. The two weights dropped through the air and slammed into the ground below at exactly the same time. In only a few seconds, 2,000 years of ignorance had been dispelled by the truth. Today, no one is sure if the story about the Tower of Pisa is true or not. But there's no doubt that at some time Galileo conducted an experiment to prove his law of falling bodies, and from that moment on became one of the most controversial figures of his time. There were a few diehards who would still insist that Galileo had used magic or some sort of trick with his experiment. But Galileo's fame was assured. His popularity became so great that he often had to hold his classes outside to oblige the large number of students and guests who attended. There were sometimes as many as 1,000 people attending one lecture. Galileo was a witty and enthusiastic speaker. He could repeat from memory many of the classics, including Virgil, Ovid, Horace, and Seneca. He wrote numerous papers, which his students copied and distributed throughout Europe. During this time, he also worked on his invention of a thermoscope, a bulb-like device that was a forerunner of the thermometer. Galileo was offered a more lucrative post as a teacher in Padua, a cultural center of northern Italy. He accepted and remained in that post for 19 years, although it never adequately paid for the mounting needs of his family. Soon he got a raise in salary and was able to pay off his first sister's dowry. She had married without it, but her new husband had threatened to have Galileo arrested unless payment was forthcoming. Now he tried to scrape together a down payment for the dowry of his second sister. This time he had to take out a loan. During his time in Padua, Galileo had a love affair with a woman named Marina Gamba, whom he never married, but who bore him three children. She was a Venetian woman of inferior social class, although whether this is the reason he didn't marry her is open to speculation. She later married a man from her own class, and Galileo took his children into his own home. His son, Vincenzo, finally became the doctor Galileo's father had always wanted in the family. The two girls were placed in a convent. One of them, Polissena, who later took the name Sister Maria Celeste, was especially devoted to her father and wrote him daily. To increase his income, Galileo tutored students in his home and opened a small shop that manufactured compasses, surveying instruments, and mathematical devices. Here he invented the sector, which is still used today by modern draftspeople. Here, too, when he was 44 years old, he came across an idea that was to revolutionize astronomy and humanity's view of its place in the universe, the telescope. Galileo trained his telescope on the skies and made discovery after discovery, and each one contradicted what people of the time thought they knew about how the universe operated. The Earth, they believed, was the center of the universe, just as Aristotle had said. Galileo had always felt differently. 21 years before he'd been born, a Polish scientist named Nicholas Copernicus had proposed a new theory, that the sun was the center of the universe, and that the Earth and other planets revolved around it. Galileo agreed, and now his new telescope was proving it. When the world heard of the marvels Galileo was seeing through his telescope, close-up views of the moon, the sun, and the stars, everyone wanted their own. The Queen of France ordered one, while at the same time, the King of France ordered that a new star be named after him. More important was the effect on the scientific community. Galileo had proved Copernicus' theory. The sun was the center of the universe. The planets, including Earth, revolved around the sun. He had also disproved what Aristotle had always said, that the Earth was the center of the universe. The world could not have been more shocked. Aristotle's followers immediately accused Galileo of trickery, and the Catholic Church accused him of even more. In response to Galileo's discovery of the moons of Jupiter, one Aristotelian wrote, "It is ridiculous that four planets are chasing each other around a large planet. It is angels who make Saturn, Jupiter, the Sun, and so forth turn around. If the Earth revolves, it must also have an angel in the center to set it in motion. For if only devils live there, it would therefore be a devil who would impart motion to the Earth. The planets, the sun, the fixed stars, all belong to one species, namely that of stars. They therefore all move or all stand still. It seems, therefore, to be a grievous wrong to place the Earth, which is a sink of impurity, among the heavenly bodies, which are pure and divine things." Fortunately, some scientists who had always secretly believed Copernicus now came out in Galileo's defense, and Cosimo Medici, the Duke of Tuscany in central Italy, offered Galileo a position as his personal mathematician and philosopher. Galileo accepted his dream job, which required no special teaching duties and freed him to pursue his own thoughts and experiments. He asked for 2 years' salary in advance so he could pay his second sister's dowry and other family bills. During this time, Galileo took special pleasure in his relationship with his daughter, Sister Maria Celeste. She wrote to him, "I put by carefully the letters you write me daily, and when not engaged with my duties, I read them over and over again. This is the greatest pleasure I have. Only in one aspect does cloister life weigh heavily on me. That is, that it prevents my attending on you personally, which would be my desire were it permitted." Galileo was happily at work on his new discoveries when the Roman Catholic Church, of which he was a member, began to express its disapproval of his theories. The Church had always taught its followers that Aristotle's view of the universe was correct. The sun revolved around the earth. The bright objects in the sky were divine spheres, unmarred, unblemished, perfect in every way. And now, a very member of the Church was refuting this. It was almost as if he were questioning the existence of heaven itself. Galileo, papers and courage in hand, went to Rome to try to convince the Vatican that his theories were sound and that Aristotle had been wrong. The visit was his own idea. He truly hoped that he could reform the Church and spare it the embarrassment he felt sure its erroneous ideas would eventually cause. The Church based its position on certain passages from the Bible. One was in the book of Joshua, when Joshua, leading the Israelites into Canaan, orders the sun to stand still. Another is from Ecclesiastes and reads, "The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to the place where he arose." Galileo suggested that the Vatican might want to reinterpret these passages, that perhaps its interpretation had been too literal. He told them, "It would be a terrible detriment for the souls if people found themselves convinced by proof of something that it was then made a sin to believe." The authorities at the Vatican listened, told Galileo he was wrong, and sent him back home. It might have ended there, except that Galileo's work didn't end there. The next year he published his findings on sunspots, which proved the sun wasn't perfect. And in the same paper he came out publicly with his approval of Copernicus. This was too much for the Church. He was summoned to the Vatican for a talk with Cardinal Bellarmine, guiding force behind the Inquisition. The Inquisition, as it's been known throughout history, is shorthand for the Congregation of the Inquisition, a body of cardinals established to make sure the beliefs of the Church were accepted unquestioningly by its followers. The powers of the Inquisition were almost limitless. It could convict anyone it chose of heresy and could then condemn them to imprisonment or death by burning at the stake. Galileo's first meeting with Bellarmine occurred when Galileo was 52 and Bellarmine was 74. It seemed a friendly enough meeting, both showing respect for the other and gently discussing their personal points of view. Bellarmine reminded Galileo that books supporting Copernicus' theories had recently been banned and suggested Galileo might want to be careful about what he wrote in the future. Galileo said that in the future he would present Copernicus' ideas as simply scientific hypotheses and personal opinions. The issue seemed settled. Galileo returned to Tuscany and Bellarmine died a few years later. It would have been a happy ending, except that Galileo couldn't stop himself from his pursuit of truth. In 1623, when he was 59 years old, Galileo wrote a publication called The Assayer that again stated that truth could not be found in Aristotle's books, but could only be found, quote, in the book of nature. He then added his most famous comment, "Nature is written in mathematical characters." That same year, a new pope was elected, Pope Urban VIII. This pope happened to be an old friend of Galileo's and a man known for his interest in science. Galileo saw hope. Hadn't this pope only recently sent him a copy of his own poetry, apologizing to Galileo that it might not be worthy of him? He arranged 6 interviews with the pope in hopes he could persuade him to change the Vatican's point of view on Copernicus. At the end of these stimulating conversations between two old friends, neither had changed their position one iota. In the meantime, younger brother Michelangelo had surfaced again after failing at 2 jobs Galileo had obtained for him. He had a new surprise this time. He was sending his wife, his 7 children, and a nurse to live with Galileo. The children, especially the oldest, had proved too difficult for Michelangelo, who could not abide what he termed the child's wicked ways. Only daughter Maria Celeste provided unselfish and undemanding love to Galileo. Around this time she wrote, "I love you better than myself, for after God I belong to you, and your kindnesses are so numberless that I feel I could put my life in peril were it to save you from any trouble." Trouble was exactly what was on the horizon. A few years passed, and Galileo wrote another book, called Dialogue Concerning the Two Chief World Systems. Not surprisingly, he stated again that the sun was the center of the universe. But this time he carefully presented his theory as a personal opinion only. It did no good. The Inquisition ordered that all copies of the book be removed from bookstores throughout Italy, and then it called Galileo back to Rome to go on trial for heresy. For many years, history saw this trial as a terrible betrayal by Pope Urban VIII against his friend Galileo, who had tried honestly and openly to discuss his opinions with the Pope. But evidence uncovered recently shows that the Pope, strange as it sounds, was actually trying to protect Galileo with his trial. Here's how. Members of the religious order known as Jesuits were organizing against Galileo because of a different theory altogether. Galileo had come out in support of what was then called atomism, the theory we know to be true, that all matter consists of tiny particles invisible to the eye called atoms. The Jesuits didn't like this theory at all. They felt it contradicted the ceremony in the Catholic Mass, where bread and wine becomes the body and blood of Christ. And they wanted Galileo charged with heresy for this theory, which implied the bread and wine were just a collection of little atoms. Pope Urban felt that even he couldn't save Galileo from death if he was convicted of this charge, so he quickly arranged for him to be charged with the lesser crime of teaching Copernicanism. The trial began in April of 1633, when Galileo was 69 years old, and lasted 3 months. He was frail and weak by the time it began, and had to be carried to Rome on a litter. When he arrived, he became so ill, he was confined to bed until the trial began. On the final day of the trial, June 22, 1633, Galileo was ushered into a large hall filled with cardinals and prelates. He stood as tall and erect as an aged, infirm man could, and waited to hear the charges and the sentences against him. A Vatican official, dressed in rich velvet robes, rose. He approached and stood before Galileo, his bejeweled fingers clutching a document. He began to read, his strong voice filling and echoing through the silent hall. "The proposition that the sun is the center of the world and does not move from its place is absurd and false philosophically, and formally heretical, because it is expressly contrary to the Holy Scripture. The proposition that the earth is not the center of the world and immovable, but that it moves, is equally absurd and false philosophically, and theologically considered, at least erroneous in faith. Invoking, therefore, the most holy name of our Lord Jesus Christ, and of his most glorious Mother and ever Virgin Mary, we say, pronounce, sentence, declare, that you, the said Galileo, have rendered yourself vehemently suspected of heresy, namely of having believed the doctrine that the sun is the center of the world, and does not move from east to west, and that the earth moves and is not the center of the world. We condemn you to prison during our pleasure, and we enjoin that for 3 years to come you repeat once a week the 7 penitentiary psalms." Galileo was then ordered to fall to his knees and refute his belief in the ideas to which he had dedicated his entire life. He did, reciting in part, "I, Galileo Galilei, swear that I have always believed every article which the Holy Catholic Church of Rome holds, teaches, and preaches. I abjure, curse, and detest the said errors and heresies. And I swear that I will never more in future say anything which may give rise to a similar suspicion of me." It is said that after this very solemn renunciation, he rose from his knees and muttered, "I pur si muove," it moves, for all that. No one knows if the story is true or not, since it seems likely such defiance would have resulted in pretty dire consequences. Nevertheless, these words were found inscribed on an engraving of him, not long after his death. As it was, the Pope did prove somewhat of a friend to Galileo after all. He had him placed under house arrest as punishment, rather than throwing him in the dungeon. Galileo retired to a villa near Florence, where he could be near his daughter's convent. He remained there until his death 11 years later, allowed to have no visitors but his children. He wrote to Maria Celeste, "My name is erased from the book of the living." For her part, Maria Celeste offered to recite the penitential psalms for him. Within a year, Maria Celeste died, at the age of only 33. Galileo was overcome with grief and sought the only treatment he knew. He plunged back into his work. He wrote a paper on motion, and he made his last discovery, the moon's librations, the rocking motions which enable us on Earth to see a little more than the area of half of a sphere. In the last phase of his life, Galileo developed severe arthritis, and his eyesight began to fail. When he was 73, he wrote, "The sight of my right eye, that eye whose labors have had such glorious results, is lost forever." But, as he had once said, "Work and you forget your troubles." So he worked. He wrote the book now considered to be his most important writing, called Discourses Concerning Two New Sciences. It was published 6 months later in Germany, but he never saw a copy of it. By then, he was completely blind. He said, "This heaven, this earth, this universe, which I, by my marvelous discoveries and clear demonstrations, had enlarged 100,000 times beyond the belief of the wise men of bygone ages, henceforth for me is shrunk into such a small place as is filled by my own bodily sensations." It was near this time that the church relented and allowed him to have special visitors. One of these was the great English poet John Milton, author of Paradise Lost. Although he didn't know it at the time, Milton, too, was destined to end his life in blindness. In the last days of his life, Galileo was working feverishly on trying to apply his theory of the pendulum to clockwork. He died of a fever on January 8, 1642, when he was 78 years old. The city of Florence voted a public funeral and 3,000 crowns for a marble mausoleum, but the Church of Rome forbade it. Instead, Galileo was buried in a corner of a small chapel. 100 years later, his body was moved with much ceremony to Santa Croce, the family vault at Florence, and a beautiful monument finally took its place above him, between he and his marvelous stars. Over the years, no discovery of Galileo's has captured the admiration and imagination of the public as much as his telescope and what it revealed about the heavens above us. But Galileo made many other contributions to science, too. His discovery, inspired by the swinging brass lamp in the cathedral at Pisa, is called the principle of isochronism. It means simply that each swing or oscillation of a pendulum takes the same time, despite changes in amplitude or how wide it swings. Galileo's experiment on the Tower of Pisa, or wherever it may have occurred, proved that bodies don't fall with a velocity proportional to their weight, and is called simply the law of falling bodies. He also discovered that the path of a projectile is a parabola. He wrote out a mechanical explanation of the tides. He was the first to see that mathematics and physics would join forces in science, and he paved the way for Isaac Newton, who would come along 20 years later and make some extraordinary discoveries about gravity. For all of these contributions, Galileo is known today as the founder of modern experimental science. Still, the discovery Galileo made in 1644 is the one we most remember him by. In that year, when he was 44 years old, news reached Galileo that an optician in Holland had made a surprising discovery. By accident, he had held two lenses up, one close to his eye, one at arm's length. When he stared through both at the same time, suddenly objects looked larger than usual. the optician was now marketing a telescope based on this discovery. Galileo was intrigued. To think of it, without moving yourself, objects could appear larger. How was it done? What explained it? The following day, he set to work experimenting with flat lenses, convex lenses, concave lenses, two of the same, one of each, this distance apart, that distance apart. For 6 months he worked, and at the end of that 6 months, he had created a telescope which magnified an object 1,000 times, making it appear more than 30 times closer. By the end of the year, he had a 20-power telescope, then a 32-power one. He knew immediately what he wanted to do with this amazing object. He would turn it towards the skies, with their mysterious twinkling stars, their floating planets, and the silent, changing moon. He turned his glass first towards the moon. Everyone knew the moon was smooth and perfect. Yet, this is not what Galileo saw. He saw rough surfaces and deep shadows alternating with luminous pockets. The shadows must be mountains. Galileo jotted down the note, "The moon is a body similar to the earth. Only, as Copernicus says, it turns around the earth." Next, Galileo turned his glass towards the sun. He was puzzled by what he saw. All those spots and blotches, which, as he watched for days, seemed to move and disappear, then reappear on the other side. "The sun," Galileo announced to the world, "spins around like a top." There was more for this new amazing instrument to discover. Galileo fixed it now on the Milky Way. People had gazed at the cloudy ribbon of the Milky Way for centuries, but no one had dared guess at what it was. Now, Galileo dared. "Millions of stars," he proclaimed, "too far away to be seen by the eye alone." Throughout the year, more and more discoveries were announced to the world from the little shop in Padua, Italy. Jupiter has moons, just like Earth, only lots of them. Saturn has a ring around it. Venus has different phases, just like the moon. And the Pleiades has 36 stars, not 7. You know now how the world, never comfortable when its old ways are being replaced by new ones, responded to Galileo. Like Darwin would do more than 200 years later, Galileo had triggered a crisis in faith. In 1979, Pope John Paul II declared that the Church must have been mistaken in condemning Galileo and ordered a commission to study the case. 4 years later, in 1983, the Church finally admitted it had been unjust and Galileo should never have been condemned. Galileo was a man who approached everything with common sense and logic, during an age when people were still relying heavily on beliefs born of habit, comfort, and even superstition. Because he insisted on proof, and because he courageously continued his work, no matter the ridicule or punishment, his life became a turning point in scientific and philosophical thought. He made scientists, and all of us, aware of the need for freedom of inquiry. As he'd predicted, religious and philosophical tradition had to yield to observation and fact, if human knowledge was to prosper. Each had to be flexible and willing to incorporate the theories of the other. The message of Galileo's life was that the human quest for understanding and truth could not be regulated or restricted by any body, be it religious, governmental, or other. Like the Earth, it must follow its own unimpeded orbit around its center of light.
This is the end of the session.